Hi, this is Raj Sharma. I'm the founder of Public Spend Forum. Before we get started with today's episode, I'd like to thank our sponsor, iValue. iValue is an e-procurement platform that enables the entire procurement process for public sector as well as private sector clients. iValue is working with states such as Ohio, Arizona, Maryland, and cities such as New York, British Columbia, as well as federal government clients such as the Government of Canada. Please check out iValue's website at iValue.com.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of our podcast series, Public Procurement Leaders. As you know, the goal of this series is to introduce you to forward-thinking and successful leaders, as well as leadership teams that are really driving major change in public procurement. Throughout the series, you've heard from leaders from federal, state, local governments, as well as private sector. What we're really trying to accomplish is learn from these leaders and the changes that they're driving, and see how we can apply those lessons within our own organizations. So today we have a really exciting episode. We're honored to have the leadership team, two of the key leaders from New York City's Mayor's Office of Contract Services, or as it's called, MOCS, here with us. We have Ryan Murray and Vincent Pernetti. I'll introduce you and them in 1 second. If you do not know already, New York City is, of course, one of the largest cities in the world and has a significant procurement budget to run all facets of operations. We'll hear more from the scope and size of the operations from Vincent and Ryan. I've had the chance to get to know the team and visit with them several times, and really been impressed with some of the initiatives that are being undertaken. So we hope to really share the story of the key things that are going on in New York City and see what we can learn from them. So first of all, welcome Ryan and Vincent.
Thank you, Raj, and thank you to all the folks at the Public Spend Forum. It's a pleasure to be on and to, you know, share a little bit of what we've learned in New York City, and I look forward to hearing from many of you out there. We encourage you to get in contact with us, and I think we really appreciate Public Spend Forum for really nurturing this community where we can learn from each other.
Great, thank you. And Vincent, welcome.
Thank you. Likewise, looking forward to this discussion and learning from this.
Great. So let me just go ahead and start off by asking you to introduce yourself, really, in terms of in the roles you each are playing, because I always find it better to really come from straight from you and tell us really the size and complexity of types of things you're undertaking on a daily basis. Ryan, so your role, I believe, is around driving some of the transformation. Could you tell us about what your role entails?
Sure. So I serve as first deputy here at the Mayor's Office of Contract Services. And among other things, I spend a lot of time supporting the executive team. They are far smarter than me and are adept in their area of expertise. A lot of my role and the teams I work with is to really be a connector to a lot of the strategic thinking around how to pull things together, nurture the teams that exist at MOCS, as well as folks who are doing the day-to-day work in the field. And, you know, change is hard. So it's about aligning current operations or future thinking to the supports that we're rolling out. And, you know, we'll say a bit more about this, but a lot of our work is phased so that it's, adoptable and in a way that the system can tolerate, because New York City is, as you've mentioned, is super complicated. It's a large spend, and we can't drop the ball. So while we're changing and fixing things, we also have to keep moving. So our job, and my team specifically, is to make sure that we can do both those things at the same time.
Great. And Vincent, you're deputy director as well within the office. Could you tell us about your role?
Sure. So like Ryan said, New York City is very complex, and it's a federalized model of procurement. So there's the different city agencies there. They each have a contracting officer. And so my role and my team's role is really to provide both guidance in terms of any questions that they have and how to do a procurement, and also oversight to make sure that the procedures were taken and everything makes sense in terms of the procurement. So we do that at both the solicitation phase and the award phase, and do that. And I've been with the city in procurement for the past 15 years, so I was on the city agency side when I first started with the city, and now kind of transferred over to the oversight side.
That's great. It'll be interesting to get your perspective, having played on both sides there. So, you already mentioned the size and scope at a broad level. Could you just maybe take a minute to describe the MOX operation overall? What's your mission? How are you really, what's your goal in terms of serving New York City and citizens better, and how are you organized?
Sure. So Mayor's Office of Contract Services is essentially an oversight and support and service organization. So as Vincent mentioned, we're in the middle of a lot of procurement activity. On any given year, that number fluctuates. So that's essentially the churn. Last fiscal year, 17, that just wrapped up. We'll have some new numbers for 18 soon, but in the fiscal year 17, we basically procured about $21 billion in goods and services for the citizens and residents and visitors of New York. And that ranges from anything to making sure that kids have after-school programs to go to seniors, they have social and food during the day, to the roads and the bridges, and the information technology, and keeping that modern and accessible to all. So it's a very diverse spend. There are about 40 agencies that we work very closely with in our model, and they're referred to as mural agencies in terms of our jurisdiction. And through our systems, we actually support many more, but that's kind of the scope of our work. What we do to ensure that the system continues to function well, there are a number of very talented agency chief procurement folks that are embedded within agencies. They're called the agency chief contracting officers. Mm-hmm. They themselves have teams. Some are pretty large teams, and others are sometimes three-person operations. They, like many of the procurement organizations that exist across the system globally might either report to the CFO, or they might report to a general counsel, or in some cases they're actually part of the executive teams of agencies and are peers to those individuals. So in terms of where the chief procurement officer lives, that depends on the structure. Our role is to make sure that they can navigate the procurement rules as they currently exist. We also provide a fair amount of technical assistance in terms of authoring the solicitations, making sure that we engage as much as possible the markets, as we particularly do that a lot in the human services space. Then there are some responsibilities that we have by charter and by the procurement policy board rules, where documents need to come through to us for final sign-off, and we're one of the oversight agencies. The other ones are responsible for making sure that there's budget and that all the legal rules are followed. We also look at making sure the procedures are followed as well. So that's a lot of the time that Vincent and our general counsel's team spend supporting the agencies. But we've gotten more hands-on as the years have gone by. Some agencies like us to come out and train their teams, and we roll up our sleeves as well. So we're very much in a consultative manner, executing our duties, not just signing off and saying, yep, you've done what you're supposed to.
Yeah, and I think we don't want to have it, there's 40 mayoral agencies, as Ryan said. We don't want 40 different ways that the city's soliciting. So we try to standardize as much as we can and try to give guidance for to make a rational process.
That was very helpful to understand the overall size and scope. You mentioned as you're working with 40 different agencies, you help them navigate the system, provide technical assistance, and also provide oversight. I'm curious, where is the preponderance or kind of the weight of your effort? Is it towards providing technical assistance, or is it more around compliance and oversight?
Yeah, I would say it's shifted. I think that we have evolved as an organization as our systems have evolved as well. So many moons ago, probably a decade or more, I would say that the old MOC spent more time in the oversight land and supporting the teams. As the administrations have changed, priorities have shifted, it's become really important and more money has gone into various kinds of services, the need isn't just did you do it, but it's, very much in how well did you achieve those goals, and there are greater expectations as, the landscape is shifting. So I would say that years ago, we were probably more in the oversight world. Today, it's a balance, and it varies by agency. So there are definitely some agencies who have what we refer to as delegated authority, and their teams can move forward based on thresholds of the kinds of things they're procuring without a lot of oversight from us. And we step in when there might be a need to explore something more innovative in terms of how they're sourcing. But there are many more agencies where we're next to them authoring the solicitation and helping to stage market feedback, whether it's facilitating sessions or and as we've introduced new technology, we've definitely become a place where we're also there hands-on, making sure that folks can navigate, and we've invested a lot in learning management between our help desk teams and training teams and change management teams. So it's more balanced now, but I think that if you asked a particular agency, one agency might feel us more as an oversight, might experience us more as an oversight, while others would definitely think of us as advisors and consultants and technical assistance providers.
That's great. That's great. And I think we've seen generally that trend as well. One other question related to how you work with agencies is around, where do you think the role of kind of the central organization, you can contribute the most value? Where is it better for you to provide services versus every agency doing some of those services themselves?
Yeah, Vincent hinted at this a little bit. I think where we're, ultimately the system is, and the entire ecosystem that is supposed to make sure that we are fair, working with responsible vendors, and that our procurement is timely, right? Some procurements should take longer than others, but we definitely want to, have contracts that start on time and minimize risk to vendors that are our partners. So that's the overall goal, and I think that we, as a central entity, are really about holding that vision up and thinking about how do we strengthen the workforce, how do we put technology in place that everybody can use, and where we're adding, I think, the most value is looking at how do you standardize practice and ensure consistency. Ultimately, what we're trying to do here is make it easier for businesses to do business with New York City. It shouldn't be ridiculously hard. You shouldn't experience whiplash working with one agency and then another. You should have some predictability in your experience. And a lot of the value that I think comes from a central entity is being able to look at where there's a need for nuance and where there's an opportunity to standardize. And it's a balance. So we have to be very collaborative with our partners who know the details of their industry far better than we do. But we want to make sure that they understand that, one vendor might work with five different agencies and shouldn't have markedly different experiences on some basic things, whether it's, supplier management and saying who you are and what you bring to the table. And if there's been any bad things in the past, you shouldn't have to answer a nuanced set of questions in one industry versus another. So there's a kind of places where we are able to standardize and support and look across the ecosystem and propose tools that might work for everybody and make it easier for vendors. So those are the places I think that we add value more than anything else.
Yeah, and I would just also say that, like, on the city agency side, it's more making sure that everyone's at a level playing field so that, so when I was at the Department of Probation, they had never done a health and human service contract before. So I was able to kind of bring that knowledge because I previously worked at the Department of Youth and Community Development. But if it was someone else, they may not have had that experience. So this kind of central guidance from the mayor's office of contracts is able to kind of pass along different ideas from different agencies so that they are able to kind of get up to speed as quickly as possible and doing it the same way that other agencies that have more experience in it can do.
So one of the things that we're spending more time on these days is definitely workforce development. You know, they're, again, super talented, extremely experienced people who have been doing this stuff for years. So there are few things I can tell them, even though that we're, you know, Vince and I together probably have like 30 years of experience in government, right? However, what we've found is that there isn't necessarily a community of practice. There isn't a learning community that is established. We often have spent time on the rules and providing guidance and saying, here's how you should do it without kind of working across some of the more expert agency chief contracting officers and bringing them together to decide, like, is there another way? So in the last few years and on the horizon, one of the places that we will spend a lot of time is tapping that knowledge and bringing that to the forefront. The other thing is New York City is definitely special. There are particular rules that we have to navigate, but we are very interested in opening up our ecosystem and learning from other jurisdictions, and for one of the reasons why we love being on this podcast. And we want to make sure that we benefit from experts that are outside of government too. Sure, there are some things that the corporate colleagues can do probably with not as much oversight, although that's changing. And we want to learn from the efficiencies that folks have found, whether it's in the corporate world or at, you know, state or another local or federal government.
That's great. That's great. There's a number of things you covered here that are, I think, quite important. One, I really love the emphasis also on really making it easier for businesses to work with New York City. I know we want to talk soon about transformation. I'm just curious on this topic specifically, though, in terms of making it easier to work with New York City. In addition to really having some standardization across different agencies, are there any other types of initiatives or things that you're undertaking that would make it easier to attract more companies to New York City in terms of procurement?
Yeah, sure. There are a number of initiatives. We'll probably talk about what we're doing to level the playing field and bring some standardization. We've done that in the human services space already. There's so much more that we can do. So in human services, you know, for years, we, you know, again, varied experiences across agencies, and some of that continues. So then we turn into more of the oversight and the collaborative entity where we're looking at the practices at a much more granular level. But we introduced something called the Health and Human Services Accelerator. The principles there weren't just put technology in place and standardize the forms that people will fill out on in an online environment, put documents in up front, that's a no-brainer. It was really also about putting a central team in place that could help to, you know, project manage, to provide some technical assistance to vendors, open up the procurement world to putting things online and giving them a roadmap so that there's some predictability. They know what procurements are coming next, right? So some of those things that we've done already in human services, we are trying to expand those principles, whether it's transparency, predictability, service, making sure that there's greater access, and spending a lot of time on building relationships with vendors. We're now trying to scale that across all the industries. And again, I think it's about standardization. Each agency, each industry can tell you about different initiatives that they've launched, focused on customer service or something else. But we are trying to build those principles into what we are launching next, In terms of our big initiatives, the procurement and sourcing solutions portal called Passport. We rolled out phase one of that last year, and that's essentially centralized supplier management. And the goal there is to essentially collect as much information up front, make it easier for folks to disclose who they are, and get their online accounts and standing so that we can then go to faster sourcing. Around that, this administration in previous years has also spent a lot of time focused on ensuring that it's easier and there are more pipelines and opportunities for minority and women business enterprises. So the MWBE program, while we as an entity, our role there is essentially to make sure that we're looking at the procurements and helping agencies to see where there are opportunities to work with MWBEs. There's a policy lead in City Hall, and that's a sister team. There's a technical assistance arm in our Small Business Services Department. But that's one of the places where we spend a lot of time as an administration, and we support by looking at data and navigating the rules. But MWBEs and leveling the playing field overall is a place where we're spending a lot of time in as administration. It's not good enough to just be efficient as a procurement entity. This is also about making sure that we're learning from the diverse folks that are out there, because we're trying to serve a diverse set of communities and people.
Yeah, no, that sounds very much all encompassing, and I'm sure businesses have appreciate that. So let me also ask, I think workforce obviously comes into play when you're trying to do many of these initiatives. And Vincent, I think you mentioned workforce development and a focus there. Could you talk a little bit about the thrust of the effort there? What types of new things are you doing to really help develop your workforce and arm them with the right set of tools, capabilities, et cetera?
We have a procurement training institute, so we've been trying to get our curriculum around that of like, all right, how can we make sure that we're not just focusing on compliance, but in terms of better sourcing? So we've been really trying to beef up our procurement training institute, and also just kind of as we shift from a paper-based process to a e-process, we've been really trying to think about reform and how we can do change management with the workforce that we have in terms of that. So I think those are kind of like two of the initiatives that we've been having.
Yeah, we've also had to honestly take a step back as an organization, and bold change means that you have to change too as an organization. And you asked earlier about our structure and how we've evolved. Like, frankly, we've had to spend time, especially in the last 2 or 3 years, while mapping out this big, bold change that is going to come through procurement innovation and our introducing technology through Passport, to think about where we're adding value. So I appreciated that question earlier. Again, I think that for us, what we've learned, especially as we're evolving to digital procurement, is that we cannot forget to put people first. And we cannot forget to not just invest in our teams, but think about at every point of introducing a new change, who's going to be affected, and what is the experience that we're looking at, what is the experience we're trying to ensure that they have. So we engage in a strategic planning exercise over the last year or so, and came out on the other end really understanding that what we're trying to nurture is leadership in our teams, and the kind of leaders that we're looking for have to, in this environment, value relationships and how to not just ask an agency for documents to prove that they've done what they're supposed to, or look at, you know, a workflow to check a status, but they've got to really get to the drivers behind the business. And similarly, in the agencies, what we've heard from the contracting chiefs is the same thing. By introducing the technology that we're working on, what we hope to do is free up the transactional time that people put into procurement now to help them focus on the more strategic experiences, right? What are we buying? For whom? Where are we finding value? Have we done this before? And what is new in the market? Really spend time doing that market research. People talk about strategic sourcing all the time, but we often don't have the time to be strategic about that. So things like introducing user experience design, bringing in people in-house to our procurement teams who are mapping out the next phases for Passport. Those are novel things for a procurement entity, I think. Not so novel in government anymore, because a lot of teams have invested in their innovation. A lot of teams have invested in kind of user experience design. But we want to bring those principles and people who value relationship management and creating new access points for our stakeholders to the table to be able to drive change. That's, I think, how we've realized as an entity that we need to function, and that's pretty different than what you might imagine and just focusing predominantly on the technology or the data. Those are key drivers, but from a workforce perspective, we are really thinking about people first, not just in training, but people first in terms of experience.
So let me ask something and see if I can get a candid response on this. So lots of changes you just described there and throughout our discussion so far. Do you believe that just through training, et cetera, you can train your workforce, the existing workforce, or are you also trying to bring in new skills as the nature of the work changes?
Any ecosystem needs flow, right? So I believe that what we've seen is that both when there's a good collaboration of veteran staff who are skilled at navigating the current systems, and there are folks who can translate that and think about the future state of operations, there's success. It's not good enough to just bring in the new smart, quote unquote, smarter technologists and innovators into the space to disrupt, right? You see that in government a lot, and not account for the folks who have been there doing the hard work. So I think that you need both. And our experience has suggested that that is true. In our last push, where we put something called Vendex, essentially it's vendor registration, where they say a lot of things about who they are as an organization, their principles, and so on. We moved that online, and we went live with that last year. And we've got some 9,000 vendors already good to go and in good standing. You know, we had I'm thinking of this staff person who was running that process for about 20-something years. And without her fully engaged and telling us why we made some of those decisions back when a particular incident happened or something like that, we would have really lost the opportunity to transition to this new system in Passport properly. Right. So I think you need both. I think it's a matter of having folks that are humble enough to fully engage and given the opportunities to engage well. What's challenging, frankly, Raj, so the candid answer is that it's hard to think about something that doesn't exist yet. And when you've got teams of folks who've been doing the work for a while who aren't engaged in a way and don't have the time to spend thinking about the future, and they don't have a partner in that, that's where it fails, right? Because those, the system that exists today, even if someone else considers it dysfunctional, it works, right? Contracts are still entered into, services are still delivered. So what you're trying to do is make it more efficient and drive forward with certain principles in mind. And unless you have folks that are trying to engage folks who've been doing the work well, you're not going to kind of get underneath the, well, it currently exists and we do X process in this way for these reasons. You're not going to really be able to translate that to the future state.
Great, great. I think I'm sure your people appreciate this perspective, and I really like the kind of the beginning of the answer. Also, when you talked about really the need for balance, you need experience. You need, you know, both experience as well as some new, fresh thinking. I think regardless of whether we're talking about procurement or whether we're talking about honestly any organization, any function, private or government. It's always good to have kind of both the experience and some people to kind of challenge the old thinking. So that's great to hear. Let me just transition a little bit and go towards the second part of our conversation and talk about your reform initiative. And you've, I believe, covered some elements of it already in the discussion. But I had the chance to come up and speak to you all about some of the work you're doing and the major transformation effort you're undertaking. Could you just talk about that? Tell everyone about, you know, what the effort entails and what specific set of issues are you trying to address through it?
Sure. So similar to what we're trying to do overall, I think we see the initiative that we've engaged in, which is essentially using off-the-shelf technology, and that's a shift also, because I think many procurement entities, and we sure did too, kind of built from scratch and hosted our technology on premises, right? So we wanted to be more nimble, we wanted to be scalable, and we wanted to make sure that we're engaging the most modern processes possible. Similar to our overarching initiative, we also want to make sure that we're making it easier for folks to do business. It takes way too long for us to go from an idea to a registered contract and services being delivered, right? So this is an opportunity for us to really take a step back and look at a lot of the processes. We have a number of methods that are somewhat prescriptive in how we go from, you know, an idea and how broad the competition needs to be through to the kind of industry that we're working in and what we're allowed to do. So, we saw this as an opportunity to be bold, to rethink what we're doing here, but with making it easier to do business at the forefront, centralizing the experience of our vendors and then our agencies and then us as oversight in that order, and purposely so, because we think that it results in positive changes. So we launched the Procurement and Sourcing Solutions Portal a few years back, got funding for it, and have been building teams to push this through. Since then, we have a pretty strong team, both external consultants and a central team that drives this internally. We see this as the initiative that is truly going to help us transform who we are and what we do. So Procurement Sourcing Solutions Portal was officially stood up, the first phase, after a year of work last August. And the goal in the first phase was for us to centralize vendor management and for us that, you know, it's supplier management in many other organizations. Core to procurement is vendors. So that was essentially a setup initiative for the next two major phases, which we anticipate are going to come about a year or so after. So this spring, we're going to launch the second phase, which is focused on centralized goods and services. So they're contracts that the city agencies must use. And they essentially put requisitions in and go right through to receiving those goods on site, inspecting them where appropriate, and making sure that the vendors are paid for what they got. So that we refer to as requisition to pay. The platform that we use, that's their bread and butter. They do that well. They're a globally known brand with a larger expanding footprint in the United States. And we're one of their first major government clients, and they've been very responsive to our peculiarities, if you will. And we're pretty happy with the first release, and we're currently in the design and build phase for the second release of the technology. Around that, obviously, has been a lot of change work. So what you could imagine in documenting what people do right now through to ensuring that we're ready to train folks and help them put new policies in place and rethink why we do what we do. So that's been the more nuanced work that has begun in earnest. And we hope to be live in the spring. About a year after that, we believe we're on track right now. We're going to basically push the sourcing piece out, which essentially is going to be, putting a roadmap for procurements online so people could predict when agencies are going to be going to market for a particular service. And that gives the market the opportunity to plan. It can't say enough what we've heard from the human services sector when we did this for them. You know, it really is, you know, everybody has a development plan as a business, as an entity. And, you know, with government being a major investor in markets, it provides them the opportunity to get ready. And we also, from managing that centrally and putting a tool in place that everybody can use across the agencies, it's an opportunity for agencies to collaborate as well, because it's probably not a surprise to you that many folks are procuring the same thing, right? So what we hope to gain from that is predictability for the market, standardization in terms of process. The data that will come from that will make us a better government. That is a huge part of what we're doing right now. And we imagine that by having robust analytics built in, looking at how long something takes and where things get stuck, as well as being able to generate rich data from the process, the goods that we buy, the services that we're procuring, and looking at the prices, that we can truly then move to be a more strategic sourcing entity. So source to pay, again, that's advertising to the market that an opportunity exists, going all the way through to receiving proposals online, evaluating them in teams, digitally, and going through the background vetting process, which we launched with the first release as a setup. That for us is the big kahuna, if you will. And we are starting to think about what we would need to do, who we would need to be as an organization. So the technology is not going to solve all of it. The data sure will help us be smarter about what we do, but we're in the early phases of thinking about who we might become with a fully digital process and one that's end-to-end.
That's great. No, that was helpful. Vincent, I'm curious, how do all the agencies you work with view this change in the system? Is it favorable, or is there some resistance there in terms of some of the changes you're trying to drive?
Well, I think the good thing is that we did do this HHS Accelerator, so the previous platform that we had. And so, like, when we initially did that, there was not resistance, but like, oh, is this actually going to work to be able to issue proposals, have the proposals come in online? And we were very successful in that endeavor. And so I think we've built a lot of goodwill with that. And then also with the release of the as Ryan talked about, the replacement system for Vendex, also kind of building goodwill with that. So I feel like it's an escalation of, all right, here's what we've done, and we've been successful at it, and this is kind of the next step forward. So I think that's been kind of like the good piece of the change management. Obviously, it's always going to be difficult to to go from the way you've been doing it always for the past 30, 40 years to a new way where it's not getting paper processes, having to standardize how you're doing things. But I think that's what we've been kind of building up to. And that's the way we've kind of focused, at least my team, to be able to go out there, explain what we're doing, get that kind of buy-in at the earlier phase so that they're kind of ready when we actually go live with the system.
Let me ask you, you mentioned something about, you know, getting rid of paper processes. This question always gets a chuckle. Are you going to get rid of paper files for procurement at some point?
Well, there is a process for how one gets rid of files in government, Raj. So I'm sure that our lawyers and our records retention folks will have lots to say about how we phase those files into a digital format. There's lots of guidance there. But look, yeah, of course, right? Over time, we will look forward to digitizing as much as we can. For good reason, that process takes a while. So, you know, we will go through that like we are the process to phase out procurement that's paper reliant.
And you definitely have to work with lawyers whenever you're in government. So we appreciate that. But no, kudos on what we see as a fast moving initiative. If you could give me a candid answer on some of, you know, we've talked about a lot of the successes. What are the biggest challenges you've seen as you're, you know, you've talked about a whole host of changes you're making, right? Everything from implementing a new technology to workforce development to changing the way, hopefully making it easier for vendors to work with you, et cetera, et cetera. What are the, on a day-to-day basis, as you're working through all of this, what is the biggest headache or challenge that you see? Maybe I can get a perspective from each of you.
I'll say one that I hear across the cube when Vince is reacting to things all day. Folks just sometimes are very stuck on doing things the old way, right? So, you know, you asked about training earlier, and no amount of training alone changes behavior. It's sometimes the relationship you have with an agency. It's the ability to, you know, have robust reporting. It's the ability for a team member to be really paying attention to realize that someone has a secret paper process that is still being used when there is the new system in place, right? So the frustrating thing is, yeah, you hear about you know, a vendor being asked to do something in paper when there's a digital process, and that is all over the place. So no, it hasn't been 200% successful, but what I think we've been good at is letting everyone know that we want to hear those stories, and we don't just, you know, smack folks on the wrist. We can respond by figuring out why did we miss something, or are we not speaking to the underlying drivers for a particular person or organization, right? Change is hard, it's iterative, and you don't get it happening on the day that you initially planned. And our job often is, you know, over the course of months to get an agency after you've launched a new process sometimes, to really develop out their organization and put new systems in place that weren't contemplated before, even though there was certainly lots of asking and pleading and cajoling and guidance to do the same. So it's just that. That's the hard part of this work.
Yeah, and I mean, I would kind of piggyback off what Ryan said, but also in terms of when you're doing the design, it's just, like, especially for myself, where I'm kind of in the thick of every day doing the current process, trying to rethink how you could do that better. And so I feel like that's always a challenge, is like, all right, I'm following all these rules and working within the framework that currently exists. How can we make this better? And so to me, that's always been a challenge with what I did with Accelerator and now doing it with the rest of the kind of city procurement landscape. So just trying to think outside the box and think of how we can meet the goals and spirit of the rules, but make it faster, make it better, and more efficient.
No, I think that's a great point, and that you need time to, you know, step back and just clear your mind and think clearly about a new way of doing things, and just getting that time is often a challenge. So yeah, I can totally appreciate that challenge. Well, we've covered a lot of ground here, and there's a lot to a lot to learn from here. I'm curious if you have any advice for leaders as our last question. What's your advice for leaders as they're thinking about undertaking, whether it's a major reform or a smaller one? How do you suggest they approach it?
Yeah, I think that everything we've said, this has been years in the making, and here we are. So, you know, there's been a lot of input from every kind of stakeholder that you could imagine to just set this project up. There's been a lot of engagement of leadership, and there's will from all sides, because we all know that one of the pillars of government that helps us to achieve our goals is procurement, right? HR, technology, budget, of course, but if we can't get to contracts, and particularly for jurisdictions like ours, where a lion's share of how we meet the public's needs is through contracts, if we can't procure well, then we are at a disservice to our stakeholders. So I would just say that a couple things. One, engage in lots of planning upfront to ensure that you capture all the pain points for folks before you even go down the road of thinking about whether it's a system or a major process reform or a workforce overhaul. Just make sure you're hearing from everybody first. That's really critical. That set us up already for success. After that, it's just, what can I do? The second part for us on the what can I do now phase is, you know, after hearing all that, you got to be selective, right? We are definitely bold and trying to change a lot. But even in that, there are places where the time may not be right for transformation, or the technology, you know, can't accommodate all of our complexity and every single wish list item that we have. So think of it as phased, right? And think about how to phase change and build momentum. We broke ours into three phases, and we definitely think about the time after that, and we're making decisions as we plan for what's achievable and what is going to set us up for continued success. And then the final thing for me is, again, we went through strategic planning in the last year to really see whether or not we, as the leaders in the procurement space of this federated model, are ready and are set up ourselves. So we came up with new values from our teams, right? Where we've got to be scrappy, get the job done. We've got to really value innovation and data and excellence and relationships. Like, we took a really hard look at our organization and our leadership and our teams to think about what we need to do, not just think about how everybody else needs to change. So some of that introspection is essential in a time of change. And that has really helped us prepare for the next phase, because we're going to be changing too.
Well, great. Yeah. Great. Now, sorry, go ahead, Vincent.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I think it's just that kind of like not thinking, like, you know, it's easy to kind of go as an oversight by yourself and try to solve all the world's problems, but you got to think about all the external, the 40 agencies, the different stakeholders in our community. So really kind of getting that buy-in and understanding of each of their business processes is, I think, very important.
That's great. No, I'm glad you all started out with listening as the first step, because I think that's really critical. And no matter how much of an understanding you have or you think you have, it's important to go out and listen. So that's great advice. And I just want to highlight, you mentioned scrappiness, and I really appreciated that when I saw that as a value, because, sometimes I think in personal life and in professional lives, being scrappy when the answer is not so clear, I think that's a great value to have. Just keep trying, right? And figure it out. On that note, I would like to just say thank you so much for joining today and sharing really a lot of great advice and insight into what you all are doing. I would encourage all our listeners to really reach out to Ryan and Vincent and others in New York City. And we'll post some of this information, of course, along with the podcast, to learn and hopefully take on some more initiatives of your own. So thank you, Ryan. Thank you, Vincent.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.